I met the most remarkable and beautiful woman on Friday night at the Ottawa Carleton Detention Center. I'm going to call her Jane. Jane came from a troubled, broken family, one plagued with wounds and addictions. She has a partner and four children. One of her stepchildren died 5 years ago at the age of seven, and her partner hasn't been able to go through the debilitating grief of that experience. 2 years ago, Jane found out that one of her sons had been sexually molested. This knowledge came at the same time that she was officially diagnosed with multiple mental illnesses, among them post-traumatic stress disorder from her own traumatic childhood. Jane derailed and committed a series of minor offenses for which she's now serving time. On Friday, when I met Jane, she just spent 8 hours that day in a courtroom in Napanee and then had been transferred to the Ottawa Carleton Detention Center, far from her home and far from those whom she loves. She was exhausted and emotionally drained, teary. She was raw and real and full of insight and beauty. She told me how at Quinney, the prison in Napanee, there's a tall fence with barbed wire and then a grate that goes across the top of the exercise compound. The grate is a double grate, and it ends with the cement wall of the prison itself. The grate does have an opening, though, through which you can see the blue sky. Quinney Prison is also on the migratory path for the monarch butterflies. So occasionally, a butterfly enters into the grate, flies all the way to the cement wall, and then flutters back and forth, not being able to find its way back the way it came and out. One day on the compound, Jane saw this happen, and it upset her deeply. The butterfly became much more than just a butterfly to her. It represented the stepdaughter that she had lost, who loved butterflies. And as she watched the butterfly struggle back and forth, she knew she had to do something. So she removed the plimsolls on her feet, took off her socks, waved them as high as she could into the air, and tried to create a breeze so that the butterfly would know which direction to fly. And she did this, and she fluttered along with the butterfly, socks held high in the air. With some success, the butterfly started making the way in the right direction. Eventually, with all her fluttering, the butterfly found the opening in the grate and flew off into the blue sky. Jane told me at that moment, when she watched the butterfly find the opening in the grate, she felt free. She said she felt like the butterfly. And she said, I also felt that my stepdaughter was free. Not only that, but the women around the compound who were watching her waving her socks in the air all began to cheer and applaud, and they also felt free that moment. Someone who quite literally was deemed not fit to be in society, was in a cage, in a prison, was able to bring that sense of freedom to those around her, was able to show the face of God to others. She smiled at me so broadly and said, that was my first butterfly. I'm up to number 22 now. The Jewish people at the time of Jesus had been anticipating a Messiah for thousands of years, a Messiah who would come and liberate them from oppression by raising them to power, a Messiah who would overthrow their enemies. The disciples, as we heard last week and again this week, were having a lot of difficulty understanding what Jesus' message is, though. Yes, he's there for their freedom, but this freedom would come at a great cost. It would come through the suffering, rejection, and death of their beloved Messiah. More importantly, This freedom, this power, is not what they understood it to be. Freedom will not give them great societal power, but instead, it means a liberation from the structures that bind us. Liberation from categories, from hierarchies, from those on the inside and those on the outside. Last week, we heard how the disciples were arguing among them which was the greatest, and Jesus told them that the one who is first must become last and the servant of all. Then he took a child in his arms and told them that whoever receives a child receives Jesus and God, Father, Mother. Beth spoke of the elevation of a child, one with no social status, no authority, no power, as the key to the kingdom of God. What we do to the least of God's children, we do to God. This week, the disciples are at it again. They're still arguing for a societal structure in which they're familiar, one where the Galilean Jews and the Jerusalem Jews distrusted one another, one where some are on the inside and others are on the outside. This is the structure the disciples are ensnared within when they tell Jesus that they tried to stop someone from exorcising a demon because he was not one of us. Jesus tries to show them the error of their ways. He flips the common expression on its head. Instead of saying, "Those who are not with us are against us," Jesus broadens this expression vastly by saying, "Those who are not against us are for us." It's a unifying statement. Imagine in today's context, everyone who isn't against us is for us. Anyone who acts in the way of Jesus is for us. There is no in crowd. There are no boundaries, there are no labels. Those who love their neighbors, those who help in the tornado relief, those who smile at strangers, those working towards relationship, those who raise children out of love, seeking freedom, peace, and joy, are acting to bring in God's kingdom. These are all for us. And who's the us that the disciples are talking about? As Christians, we're well to remember that we're not called upon to follow a particular denomination. We're called upon to follow Jesus. A passage in the book Traveling Mercies, a book by the Christian author Anne Lamott, highlights the prejudices and the camps Christians so often create. In the passage I'm about to read, Lamott tells of her fear of flying and an experience she had on a plane that became very turbulent and very scary plane ride, where in the end, so I'm going to tell you the happy ending of the story, she bonds with the people on either side of her, but at the beginning, it doesn't start out this way. She writes, "Finally, we were allowed to board. I was in row 38, between a woman slightly older than I, with limited language skills, and a man my own age, who was reading a book by a famous right-wing Christian novelist about the apocalypse. A newspaper had asked me to review this book when it first came out, because its author and I are both Christians. Although, as I pointed out in my review, he's one of those right-wing Christians who thinks that Jesus is coming back next Tuesday, right after lunch. And I'm one of those left-wing Christians who thinks that perhaps this author is just spiritualizing his own hysteria. How is it," I asked, pointing out jovially to the man's book, partly to be friendly, partly to gauge where he stood politically. In other words, is he one of us, or is he of the other kind? Jesus, I expect, is getting pretty exasperated with how thick his disciples are being when they continue to insist on these categories. He reminds them again, now using amazing hyperbole, of what it means to follow Jesus, of the breadth of this category, of the universality of this category, and of the consequences of harming the least among them, a child. It would be better, he says, for them to gouge out their eyes, cut off their hand or foot, than hurt a child. Because by causing others to stumble from God's love, we enter our own hell, a place where we cause division within ourselves and between ourselves, God, and others, where we erect barricades and concern ourselves with self-glorification, power, and authority. We squabble over who is the greatest. The wounds we cause to children are ones that are not easily healed. The innocence of a child is removed. And even if they can grow to experience freedom and joy that Jesus wants of us, indeed died to secure for us, their pure childlike experience of freedom may never fully be restored. The testimony of Dr. Christine Blasey Ford at the Kavanaugh hearings this week, and the testimonies of all those who have spoken up in recent years under the hashtag MeToo movement, shows how, despite overcoming much adversity caused by their experiences, the wounds from sexual assault inflicted on them, some of them as children, are carried forward for a lifetime and continue to impact them and those around them. Better to tie a millstone around one's neck, gouge out one's eyes, cut off our hands and feet, if it causes us to make someone stumble from their belief, than to experience hellfire. The theologian Daniel Migliore speaks of hell as a place of inwardness and of isolation from God and others, and how God never ceases to pull us, to try to pull us out of this self-glorification, and how God's love is never coercive. God's love is freely, openly, steadfastly given, and it's up to us to receive it through choice, through our actions, through our love. Esther shows us this love in the first reading when the king promises her anything she wants, up to half his kingdom. And she, a woman with limited authority, uses what she has, her beauty, her intelligence, her courage, to save the lives of her people. Esther chooses to risk her life to save her people instead of reaping excessive personal gain. Our actions hold so much value. And as the Kavanaugh hearing in the U.S. shows, our society is still hung up on protecting categories that make it nearly impossible for victims of abuse to come forward, because those in power are isolated behind these concrete barriers that protect them, but also cage them in. This is also their personal and societal hell. The gospel reading this morning ends by reminding us that we are salt. But if salt loses its saltiness, how can we season it? So we must have salt in ourselves and be at peace with one another. How do we keep our saltiness? We turn back to God. We avoid hurting others. We show others what the freedom Jesus has secured for us on the cross looks like. Today we heard three examples of people who are seemingly on the outside show us what freedom looks like, what God's face looks like. The exorcist was not one of the disciples, and yet he was following Jesus and casting out demons and showing God's freedom from bondage. The women of the Me Too movement are paving the way for all people who've experienced abuse and bringing down the walls of oppression. The wounds that Jane experienced as a child came to the fore when her own son experienced sexual assault. And that caused her to act in a sabotaging and destructive manner. Yet, from behind bars, from within a cage, and high fences and barbed wire of the prison compound, quite literally cast out of society, like Esther, Jane was able to experience and show those around her what God's freedom is. Have salt in yourselves and be at peace with one another.